This podcast is brought to you by Equus Grooming Products. They're the finest quality available human-grade cosmetic ingredients, not industrial grade, and they're backed by a 100% money-back guarantee.
I love these products. I use them all the time.
Welcome to another edition of Doc Halligan Unleashed with Joey Villani, and I'm so excited. We have a special guest who's a personal friend of mine, Judy Mancuso. She is the president and founder of Social Compassion in Legislation. Welcome, Judy.
Thank you, Dr. Karen Halligan. So nice to see you, hear you, and be with you this morning.
Well, I was telling Joey a little bit about your background. And how many cats did you have after your divorce when we first met?
15.
Okay, I said 16. I was close. Okay. Yeah.
Wow.
And you're down to how many now?
5.
Oh, so you are an expert in geriatric care for cats, right?
Absolutely. The oldest, I had 2 lived at 22, and I had 3 lived to like 18. But mostly it seems like, 15, 16 is their longevity. And I have one still going with me right now, Bootsy, and he's 19 and he is doing great.
It's funny, cats age better than dogs, just in general. They seem to anyway. Because growing up, we had a lot of cats growing up, and I had one cat that lived until 19, Heidi. But it's always seemed like they got grumpy after 15 years of age. Their personality changed a little bit. The one cat, Dweezil, we had was great. And then after 15 years old, I think she lived until she was 18, she got tough.
Just like humans.
That's right.
I guess you're right.
Well, I was telling Joey a little bit about you and how impressive you are, Judy, as a strong woman, and how you have just changed so many animals' lives for the better. If you want to just tell the audience quickly some of the laws that Social Compassion Legislation has helped pass so they can understand the breadth of how much you've made an impact on animals.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Early on, I was in rescue back in the 90s, early 2000s. And while it means everything to that one animal that you are rescuing, there's so many more that need help. And so I felt that if I was going to invest my time 100% into helping animals, it would be changing laws. And that way I could get the greatest impact and help the most that I possibly could. One of the first bills we did, I didn't even know there was a need for it, but it was called Dogs in Unattended Vehicles, or Dogs in Hot Cars, we called it. And at the time, this is like 2006, animal control could not get into a car and rescue a dog that was dying of a brain seizure from heat. The only law enforcement that could get in were police officers. Well, police just didn't come. They were busy with big crimes or whatever else. And so animal control would stand by and actually watch these animals perish in people's cars. And so I was asked to help them to do a bill, animal control, city of LA at the time, and so that they could have that right to get in someone's car and rescue the animal. So that was the first one. And I've been told by many, many animal control officers, it has saved so many lives. So who knows, by now, 14 years later, thousands, tens of thousands, right? And then in current history, most recent, we did a bill that makes it prohibits for personal care, cosmetic, shampoo, for products to be sold in the state of California that are tested on animals, meaning the only products that should be sold here in California are cruelty-free. So being the 5th largest economy in the world, this has a huge impact because now we've disrupted this supply chain of shampoos and deodorants that test needlessly on animals. Since you can't sell them here in California, that means you're going to reformulate them, but you're not going to be selling the cruelty ones and the non-cruelty ones. You're just going to go ahead and make those non-cruelty ones to sell to everybody. Does that make sense? Does that?
It does. Yeah. It completely does. So what you guys did was really just revolutionized the whole industry, because how many people in California, I don't know, but however many millions of people. So you can't sell there. So let's just reformulate the product so we can sell everywhere.
Yes.
That's great.
So now you're talking saving, you know, millions of animals exponentially from these cruel tests that just aren't needed anymore. You know, these other tests that are so much more good for humans, safer for us to test these animals, test these products on, and those antiquated animal tests, get rid of that and move on and save the animals all at the same time.
Judy, tell Joey what that fight was like for you, going up against these lobbyists with lots of money. I mean, I don't think people realize the fight that Judy had ahead of her.
That's right. Well, the first meeting I was in the senator's office that was carrying it for us, it was myself and our two lobbyists, and there was literally, I think the count was that day, about 16 of them are around the room from all the big companies, Johnson & Johnson, L'Oreal, Lever Brothers, everybody was there. And they were looking at me like, you are a crazy animal rights person and you're going down, you know, and they had all their big guns against us. And I know that in one quarter, they spent like $1 million fighting it. And the big companies all together with all these lobbyists. So then when I walked out of the office with my two lobbyists and my head lobbyist, David, he said, Judy, you know, you're not going to win this unless you lobby up. And I said, uh-oh, what does lobby up mean? And he said, you saw them? You're going to have to hire more people. He says, we're not going to do this on our own. It's too big. And so that night, I got on the phone and start calling all of our top donors and laying it out and saying, here's what we're trying to accomplish. This is our opposition. We need money to hire more lobbyists and go toe-to-toe. And thank goodness I had a group of people with me that had the means to donate. And we fought the battle and we got it done.
You know, I have a question for you. What is their advantage anyway of animal testing? To me, and again, what do I know? But I would think, number one, you're getting a bad reputation. You're hurting these poor animals. Number two, I would think it's extremely costly to do this instead of just knowing. I mean, you know, how many different ingredients that you haven't already tested that you already know what it does? So what was their advantage to it? Did they ever say
well,
that?
Well, it's just same old, not having to disrupt what they're doing, not to change their production, and just going about it the same way. And that's pretty much it. But you're right about the products. I mean, the ingredients, rather. They have all been tested on. And that is how we wrote the bill, was that we would grandfather in all these ingredients that have ever been tested, right, in all of humanity since the beginning of time. Okay, those ingredients are all good, but going forward, don't be testing any more ingredients on animals. Find another way. And that's what got signed into law.
And that really put you on the map, Judy, as far as being able to acquire some pretty prestigious board members, which I'd love for you to talk about.
Yeah, well, I feel very fortunate. You know, when I first started this in 2007, 2006, when I did the animals and unattended vehicles, I was just an individual, you know, wanting to make change. And I thought if I worked with big groups like the city of Los Angeles and whatnot, that I could accomplish these big things. But quickly, I found that that was not going to be the case. And that, you know, all of a sudden, you know, here I am running this spay and neuter bill that you would think would be so simple. And we had the NRA against us, the American Kennel Club. And it was like, what? What's happening here? So early on, I start building a board, and it morphed and changed over the years. And now I have, you know, prestigious folks like Dr. Karen Halligan and Diane Keaton, the Hollywood superstar and legend, you know, just so unbelievable that she's on the board. Louise Linton and Margie Parencio, Katie Cleary, and Simone Reyes, Nick Sackett, who works with me daily and is our legislative director, my friend Hayes, that's been with me since the very beginning of time, and Leah Sturgis, who I met saving bobcats and mountain lions. So we've just got this rock solid group of people who are dedicated. And they help financially. They help, as in Dr. Halligan's case, she brings her credentials to the table to be able to testify and help us lobby as well, and her expertise. So they bring a wealth of dedication and resources to the issues.
And now we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
So, Karen, Equus products here, they're pretty incredible. And I have in my hand right now is the Premier Pet Shampoo. Not only can the professional buy it, but you could buy it right off the shelf and use it at home. It is weightless and it's just a great, great product.
Wow. And, you know, I trust you so much. I've actually used their products. I love it. I know people can go to Equus.com. EQYSS.com, and at checkout, punch in Doc H, and they get a 15% discount. So we love these products. Visit Equus.com. And what are you working on right now that you're real passionate about? I know you've got a lot, but what are you excited about?
Well, we started the year with 12 bills, and they were amazing all on their own, each one. But then COVID-19 nightmare hit, and the first thing that the legislature did was actually shut down and focus everything on all things COVID. So we managed to fight for three of our bills to keep going. And the reason for two of them is they were actually vetoed by the governor last year. So they made it through the process, but they were vetoed. And he had very specific veto messages on how to fix them and bring them back. So one that has to do with microchipping, that's near and dear to you, Karen, you know, he wanted an exemption in that in case someone had a hardship and couldn't pay for that microchip, or a shelter was too poor to have microchips offered. So we have those exemptions in there, and we're making our way back to his desk on that one. Another one that has to do with animal blood banks. There's only two blood banks in the state of California. They have a monopoly, and they're actually called closed a captive colony, which means the animals are kept in cages and bled every 14 days. Other states handle it differently, where they have donors such as humans that can show up and donate blood. And this, you know, is a much more humane method. but also it brings more blood into the supply chain. So that one is a little more complicated, but it was very specific what he wanted. So we're doing that again to get to his desk and sign. And then the last one, this one is really important because it is COVID related. We did it a couple years ago and Jerry Brown vetoed it. And it was called the Iconic African Species Protection Act, which says that you cannot possess a body part of an endangered species, meaning someone goes to Africa, shoots Cecil the lion, and then brings it back and sticks it up on their fireplace. No, we're going to make those body parts, those trophies illegal. That's the most that we can do. And then the second part, what we did is we added the second part to the bill, which is the COVID piece. And what this says is in the state of California right now, there are such things as live markets, which is what the Wuhan, China live market, where we think that COVID came from. Somebody went and bought a bat that had been infected, had the coronavirus, and there's this spillover that happens to the human. And we have these live markets in the state of California. They're in every state in the United States. And in our live markets, we have turtles, and we have non-poultry birds, and we have frogs. And not only are these animals, some endangered, but they're an invasive species and they carry zoonotic diseases and can have this zoonotic spillover, just like what happened in Wuhan, China. So the Chinese have already taken these off their menus and off their out of the markets, and we want to do the same thing. So that's been added in the bill. So now it deals with the endangered species and it deals with this live market and invasive species issue.
Joey, have you seen any live animal markets in New Jersey?
No, I haven't. That's what intrigues me about this, because, I mean, I know that they have where they have the cows and the pigs and all that. And I'm trying to think what you call it. We don't call it live markets. Maybe that's exactly what it is. But all these other species, and I never even knew that, you know, invasive species are being introduced to these markets. It's funny because when COVID hit, and that's all we talked about in China.
Well, our bill actually brought that subject up, not only on the local news here in California, but we're doing a similar bill with an assembly member in New York. Her name is Linda Rosenthal. And there's over 80 of these live markets in the state of New York, and most in Manhattan area and in the city. And Linda got on, CBS National. So it wasn't until we introduced that bill and introduced the bill here in California that that was even discussed, Joey. So to your point, It was not coming up. And that was one of the, you know, kind of grossest things. I kept watching this about China. And you know, Donald Trump calling it the China virus. Well, it could be the virus right here at home. It's like, yes, it came from there, but it could come from any one of these markets as well.
So, Judy, do you think if California passes this bill, do you see it spreading quickly to the other states, adopting these principles?
I hope so. And even a federal bill. But it's tough. I'll tell you, you know, I have people from other states that call me after we get a bill passed. They find me, they email me, they call. And the truth of the matter is what we were talking about before is it costs money. And,
yes. You
know, a lot of these folks that call me, you know, they've got great intentions. They might have an animal group or be an SPCA or something. But without organized resources, lobbyists, you get eaten alive. So that's the worst part of all this is we have the will to do the right thing. We want to do the right thing, but there's not that big of an opportunity for an even playing field.
Well, and I can speak as a board member, if you want to help, if you donate to social compassion legislation, I guarantee you that money goes to make a difference. And that's, you know, that's why Judy, her little Judy Mancuso, you know, she's been able to, she's a little fighter and she doesn't give up. The hair standing up on my, because I've seen her up in Sacramento. And she's up against these powerful people and she doesn't back down because she's doing it to have a voice for the animals. And we do need the money to make the difference. And that's what, Judy, how can people donate or learn more about the laws that you're talking about?
Yeah, it's all on our website, which is socialcompassioninlegislation.org. And, you know, we have a donate button. You can send a check. We just started something called Compassion PAC, a political action committee. And that's to raise money to donate to campaigns of candidates who are good on animal issues as well. So yes, please donate. Please visit our website, socialcompassioninlegislation.org.
Joey and I had had conversations. Joey actually has that drive like you have. And he has, Joey, tell her about your whole grooming laws that you've tried to get passed and the difficulty that you've had, Joey.
Well, we have a few bills came out and we've been working 5 years on this bill called Bijou's bill. And it's getting pet groomers licensed because of issues that have happened. Issues have been minimal, but, you know, one death in a grooming salon is one death too many. And we want to get the industry licensed. The problem that we had was trying to get government and the industry to be able to work together to build something that actually works. We got through three rounds of the assembly. When it hit the Senate, it went dead. The bill got time barred, and now it's back up again. But they reintroduced the original bill, which didn't work the first time. And I'm extremely active on it. But there was 181,000 constituents that wanted pet groomers licensed in the state of New Jersey, which I think is a good thing. We need to have some sort of licensing and to make sure the pets are protected.
This there was an attempt at that, and I think it was called Rudy's Law.
I know all about it.
Say 2009, mm-hmm. And the folks that were carrying it were supporting it and trying to get it moved. Many dogs had died in either, you know, the heaters where they dry them off, that they just walk away and the timer breaks and they are literally fried in these heaters. Their eyes gouged and things chopped off. I mean, it was horrific. I didn't know of all of this, all these tragedies in pet grooming. And the what they were up against, and I also served 8 years on a state board, the California Veterinary Medical Board. So what they were up against is bureaucracy to create a new regulatory board or fit it into an existing regulatory board, which would be cosmetology or the Veterinary Medical Board. Well, nobody wanted it because it didn't come with money. It's not that institutionally people don't think that it should be regulated. It boils down to who's going to pay for it, how do you pay for it, and who's going to absorb those regulations and oversee them. So that's why it stopped in California.
And you're correct. And that's the reason, that's the problem that we're facing here in New Jersey. And I know about the California California bill well, because I work closely with the California Pet Groomers Association, who actually helped us here in New Jersey, because your bill came first and then us. But it looks like New Jersey will probably be the first state to be regulated, but it's the same thing. Who's funding this? Because everyone has great ideas, and at the end of the day, the state comes back and says, okay, we're bankrupt. We have no money. How is something like this going to get funded? But it is an important issue. Anything to deal with man's best friend, and that's dog and cat, is important these days, because these are part of our family, and that's how people have to look at it. If it's part of your family, you have to make it safe.
And people spend a lot of money on it. I mean, and they have that trust, and, you know, yes.
So what could a pet owner who needs to take their pet in, what are some things that they could do to prevent having a fatal accident? Are there things that they could do, Joey, you think?
Are you talking about as far as the grooming goes? Yeah, absolutely.
So that their pet doesn't die getting a mani-pedi. What are simply some things that pet owners would do to make sure their pet's safe?
I'm going to give you three tips that I say right away. Number one, look at credentials on the wall and updated ones, not ones that were from 1974, because the industry's changed so much, and see what kind of continuing education is going in there, because there is a lot of continued education, and it doesn't necessarily have to happen in a school, but in our industry, we have a lot of things state to state to state, even online, continued education. Number two, take a tour of the place. Anyone that tells you that they don't want to show you that, you know, don't give me the crap that it's insurance reasons, because you know what? I would give people the instructions. Don't touch the dogs under the table and you know, ask all the questions you want. Ask them to me. Don't talk to the groomer directly, because, you know, you're going to disrupt them. Number three, if the place does not look and smell clean and tidy, run away, because if you can't present yourself in a professional image, then how well are you taking care of my pet? Because that's the most basic thing. You want to come in there and it wants to look and smell like a professional human grade hair salon. And that's how it is. I mean, just open your eyes. Those are the best three examples. Listen, I have a list of them. But those are the three top examples I can
who
give you.
Is when you say look at for the credentials, whose credentials do you trust? What's the name of the association, or is there local, or is it national? Who do you point to?
That's a great question. And unfortunately, see, I owned a grooming school for years. We were world renowned, and our curriculums were approved by the state boards. Not that the state boards knew anything about grooming, but they wanted to see that we had structure. So number one, if you're going to a place and they have school credentials, make sure that they're approved, and it'll have the state board right on it. But that doesn't mean that person that never went to school, because I was one of those people. I was taught by one of the greatest people in our industry, but I didn't attend school, but I formed a school and formed structure. I think anything where you can look and see that it's from an organization like National Dog Groomers Association, the American Kennel Club, and do your research behind them. Look and see what's on the walls, because there's so many fly-by-night ones. So this is what I do. I take pictures of them before I bring my pet and say, okay, let me do research on who these people are actually training under and see what kind of structure they have, because it could be hundreds and hundreds of hours of information that these companies are teaching. And then you may have somebody who opened up last week and says, I'm going to start an association, because in the grooming industry, you can do that, unfortunately. And they opened up last week and they're putting out a diploma. So unfortunately, it's buyer beware. You have to do your research and talk to that person, that groomer, and maybe they'll give you the information freely, because I know I will. Okay, this is what I study. I look them up. Don't trust me. Trust what I'm telling you and do your research.
Because mm-hmm. That was one of the problems with the bill, too, is that there wasn't an entity in the state that they could point to and say, okay, here's the credentialed body that you need to go through in order. And so it would be having to set up that structure. And that's what was so costly. You know, if a veterinarian wants to get licensed, there are schools you go to internationally where you can get licensed. Registered veterinary technician, same way. We have credentialed schools and they have their curriculum and they need to do on-site training and then they get licensed. But for the grooming industry, there wasn't a body that you could point to and say, yes, if you finished this, we could give you that stamp of approval. So that was,
it was
one other thing that came
up. In the New Jersey bill, we actually, that was one of the things that was probably the hardest thing to work on because the veterinarians didn't want us. The veterinarians said it's apples and oranges. And so what we did was, is we came up with a board through the Consumer Affairs, which was 12 people. And it was 6 groomers, 2 veterinarians, and I forget what the other ones were, but there was people in the pet industry. And it was a board that was going to decide how you were going to be able to test in these credentials, which I thought was great. And they also had a clause in there that we're going to revisit this in a year, because if what is being put out there is not working, let's fix the problem. Instead of it being black and white, let's leave it a little bit gray so we can go back and fix any problems that we had. But unfortunately, like I said, it never made it through the Senate process.
That sounds really good. I hope you make it. And maybe we can follow New Jersey then. That'd be awesome.
Hey, you guys, I'm so glad Joey and Judy, you have connected now. And Judy, it was fabulous having you come on. Please, if you're listening and you care about animals, go to Judy's website and donate. Socialcompassionandlegislation.org, because she's the real McCoy. And Joey, I think you would be afraid of her.
I think so. You might be right. Okay. You might be right.
All right. Thank you, Judy.
Thank you. Thanks, Joey. Thanks.
Thank you, Judy.
Thanks.
And now Doc Halligan's Medical Minute.
The top 10 common foods can be lethal to pets. Here they are. No bones about it. Do not give your dog bones. They can get stuck in their mouth or splinter in their intestines. No bones of any kind. Just say no to raisins and grapes. It only takes 1 or 2 grapes to cause life-threatening kidney failure. No macadamia nuts. They can cause severe vomiting, diarrhea, and illness. Avoid avocados because they're way too rich in fat. Potato peels and green-looking potatoes can be toxic to your pet's immune system. Chocolate can be lethal. A potential lethal dose of chocolate for a 16-pound animal is only 2 ounces of Baker's chocolate. Onion and garlic are also poisonous to pets. Plums, peaches, and pears can also cause a heart problem from cyanic glycosides, which are in the pit. Milk and cheese are harmful for adult animals, way too high in fat. And last, ham and other fatty meats are very dangerous. Know this list, it could save your pet's life.